Last night when I was chasing her, that's where it starts. What I see changes. The stairs stretch. It's an optical illusion, which later disappears from my record. And it doesn't end there. At this moment, I'm seeing a train at the platform. A train that isn't there.
Magic! Welcome to Cord Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the cord-cutting revolution so that you have the complete information you need eventually to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. Me? Oh, I'm just Tom Merritt.
Oh, and me, I'm Brian Brushwood. I was waiting for the toss. I didn't get one. It was a toss that wasn't there.
Whoa, magic! Whoa.
That was Clive Owen in the Netflix original Anon. Is that a movie, a series? What is that, Bryce?
Yes, that's a film coming May 4th. It's like a cop thriller, but there's like a black mirror layer of like, oh, they've got augmented reality headsets, but then
it's got a little bit of Mr. Robot. It's got a little bit of that CBS show Person of Interest. It's got a little bit of Black Mirror to it.
It's a good trailer. I recommend if you haven't seen it.
Clive Owen was the guy from Children of Men, right?
I don't know.
Okay, hold on while we all consult our stuff. I'm pretty sure Clive Owen was in Children of Men.
IMDb. You know what I've noticed about Netflix, and it hit me while I was watching this trailer. The thing you used to do would be, let's say, Pacific Rim comes out right in 1998. Let's pretend. Production company that's kind of low budget would come out with Atlantic Rim. In fact, there actually was an Atlantic Rim that did exactly that. That's why I'm using this as an example. And it would go straight to DVD. It would be a budget version. And that's how some companies would be able to get by. Netflix is doing the high stakes version of that. They see Person of Interest. They buy Black Mirror. They see Mr. Robot. And they're like, huh, what if we did that, but throw a lot of money at it and make it really high quality? Let's see what happens then.
And when they don't know what else to do with it, they put the word Cloverfield in front of it. And then and bada bing bang, you're good to go.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works. I think that's J.J. Abrams buys something, puts Cloverfield and goes, this didn't work. Do you want it, Netflix? They're like, yeah, we'll eat anything. It's fine. All right, well, let's get to our primary target because it's all about Netflix. The LA Times has some sources telling them that Netflix has been looking into buying movie theaters in Los Angeles and New York. Landmark Theaters, which is co-owned by Mark Cuban, was reportedly one of the theater chains being considered. Now, plans are, according to their sources, stalled over the price right now. Netflix thought the price was too high, but it wasn't through lack of interest that they moved away. You think about it. Netflix has 125 million subscribers worldwide. They're spending $8 billion this year on original and licensed content. Today, it came out that Netflix wants to raise another $1.5 billion in debt for general corporate purposes, which probably means productions, you know, making movies, making content, et cetera. And Bryce, you brought up the very interesting question of like, well, hold on. Didn't Fox, Paramount, and all the movie studios used to own the theaters, and then the government came in and broke that up because it was a monopoly? Could Netflix own theaters is a whole different question. It sounds like they feel like they could, or they wouldn't be pursuing these negotiations.
Well, let's peel back the curtain a bit. I'm assuming, and we haven't discussed this beforehand, so maybe we have different assumptions going into this. I read this story as they are tired of all of these dumb film festival rules about what constitutes a real and quote not real release.
Can I stop you right there?
Yeah, go for it.
There's only one film festival that has done that. It's in France.
Correct.
So buying these theaters would not fix that. And the Oscars and Golden Globes, everything, they've been fine. They've had no problem getting into those.
But we've already seen, if not specifically with Netflix, with the Hulu, the OJ documentary, they're all like, wait a minute, this is an awfully long documentary. This feels like a miniseries and whatnot. We have seen fuddy-duddies try to juke the stats, to break the rules, to box them out. And if I'm Netflix and what we crave is the legitimacy of being a top tier movie content creation service, then it seems to me like buying a movie theater would be a good way to do it. However, I think Bryce did really uncover something interesting with this whole anti-monopoly, antitrust situation.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think Netflix is doing this to solve the award problem per se, because again, in France, let's say they even bought theaters in France, they'd still, even as a theater owner, have to hold the movie for 6 months. It's the day and date release thing that they don't like. They've been able to get into the theaters and get movie consideration. Owning the theaters, I don't think is going to stop the fuddy-duddies from trying to throw a wrench in their works. I think they want movie theaters because they want to showcase their stuff and prove to the other theater chains, hey, check it out. We can fill seats and do day and date. It's not a problem. I think they're just have enough hubris that they think they could pull that off.
Is this because you think they want to make more money? You think that there's gold in them, their theaters, or do you think there's legitimacy in them?
I think Netflix looks at theaters and says, you're dumb. Putting them on Netflix day and date is not going to stop people from going and seeing them in the theater if we do it right. You won't believe us, so you won't carry our movies, with a few exceptions. So what if we just buy a couple theaters and show you, hey, you can make money doing this too. And then rising tide lifts all boats. More people go see Netflix movies. That brings more money in for Netflix. It gets the Netflix name out there even more. And the few people left who don't have Netflix in the US, maybe subscribe.
Now, maybe we're both misremembering, but I could have sworn that the stated reason or the speculated reason that they released Beast of Burden, what was the Idris Elba? Beast of No Nation, yeah, was for it, so that it could have Oscar consideration.
Yeah, they do that with every documentary and every movie they do. They put it in theaters. But they have to find independent theaters, and occasionally Landmark will do this for them. They'll run it. Landmark will run movies from Netflix in their theaters, but they don't get the AMCs. They don't get the Regals. They don't get the big chains. And that's why I'm saying, like, hey, well, maybe if we buy a couple theaters from our buddies Landmark, you know, who've been playing our movies already and have shown that it can work, we can make a big deal and prove that this is going
to
happen.
Yeah, I don't think I guess if I'm drilling down to the place where it seems like we disagree, which is always my favorite moment, is to figure out that exact moment of divergence. It seems to me like you believe this to be a profitability monetary play, whereas I think it's so transparently a legitimacy play to have an efficient vehicle by which they make sure all of their content qualifies for all the awards, and if people care about the movie experience, they can now have it. I don't get the impression
they already have
they
that though. They don't need to buy theaters to make that happen. That's already happening.
And
the only exception is Cannes, where they enforced the rules, they say, or changed them, some people say, so that it would be impossible for Netflix to do day and date and release it. Netflix has no problem getting their movies for award consideration outside of that.
I think a more accurate way to phrase that is has so far not had any problem. I think this would be heading off at the past an incoming wave of problems where it's like you can
see. I don't
think
this heads off any change in that, though. See, this is where I think there's a disconnect. You're kind of saying, well, Netflix has a problem with awards consideration. They don't.
No. I'm not. Allow me to clarify. Who
don't like Netflix and say they shouldn't get to awards. There's even Spielberg out there saying they should be Emmy consideration, not Oscar consideration.
That's a misconstruction of my point. Just like me buying insurance doesn't mean I have a car crash problem. I'm not saying that they have a distribution problem. I'm saying that they're in a position to buy insurance when they see the tides, when they see the winds changing, when they see some number of entertainment professionals trying to box them out, trying to put them in a different category. This is the kind of insurance you buy to make sure that it will never be a problem.
I guess it doesn't have to be either or, right? They could be looking at this saying, we can make sure we get into theaters in case somehow we're not able to get any theaters to show our movies in the future. Although that's really probably going to be impossible. Like, so, there's always art theaters. university theater something.
Sure.
I guess they could be heading off like, well, but maybe the Oscars changes and says we have to be on this many screens. And so my problem with that as being a possible like main motivation is this is a lot of money to spend, which I guess maybe that's why they're like, eh, it's too much money. It would be a lot of money to spend to fix only that problem. But if they're like, well, it gives us that insurance, which I think is a really good point, and it can help us prove the business model, and we can collect data on, you know, what behavior in theaters and all of that, then I think maybe it makes sense. So it's probably not you or me. It's probably a little bit of all of these.
Yeah, and I think I guess maybe I'm just having a hard time picturing there being a lot of money in theatrical display of Netflix stuff. You know,
there's a lot of money in releasing movies nationwide. Otherwise, movie studios wouldn't make The Avengers, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, sure. But that's...
Oh. So if Netflix is saying, we think if we buy a couple theaters and prove that we can bring people into these theaters, maybe we can get the other theaters to loosen up and we could get nationwide releases in all theaters, then there's a lot of money there.
Okay, so this might be the place where we come back together on the same team. Here's the question is, let's say that is their speculative play. Are they right? Because I think in my heart, I don't think day and date is ever going to work. I think given the choice, there will be a niche amount of people, a few people who, as a novelty, will want to go and see it in the movie theater to be around other people. But I think in general, I've really enjoyed the flexibility of watching Lost in Space when I want, where I want, wherever I want.
That is an anecdotal argument.
Yep.
That makes perfect sense.
Yep.
I, as a scientist, can't say you're right, but I can't say you're wrong. I don't know that there's been enough research to figure out, but I would say that while that makes sense, it also could make sense that that is overblown, that people even say they want that and then go, I really like the seats and the big screen. And you know, that one place has really good food. And it turns out that it doesn't have that big of an effect. And I'm certain that Netflix believes that, whether they're right or not.
Can I submit as evidence the fact that longtime listeners of this program know that nobody has been a louder proponent, more excited about the Alamo Drafthouse? Every time I see a movie anywhere but the Alamo Drafthouse, I just want to punch that dumb theater in the face, whatever theater it is. The nearest Alamo Drafthouse is 15 minutes away, and it's one of the best. There's one right across the street. It's literally less than a minute away. And since that movie theater opened, I have seen exactly one movie at Alamo Drafthouse in almost, two-thirds of a year now, right? And it's that convenience trumps fidelity thing. And if you asked me before then, like, that's what makes me wonder. Like, I'm going to what I firmly believe is a good but not as high quality experience as an Alamo Drafthouse. Is time and time and again my choice to go see a movie because it's so convenient. I gotta believe that if it was on Netflix at home, why would I even bother to go across the street if I had to?
I don't know. It's you. It could be absolutely true that you decide, you know what? It makes perfect sense for me to just stay home and watch these at home instead of going to a theater, and that you are in the minority. Like, you're one data point.
Yeah,
we also
sure.
don't know if that's really true. It could also be possible that you say that because you believe it, stay at home, get interrupted by Penny, phone rings. You realize, oh, you know what? The sound isn't great in here. I really miss being at the theater, and start going to that convenient theater because there are other benefits that outweigh the inconvenience that you hadn't realized.
Not the least of which is that part of the ritual is you turn off your phone and you are...
I don't know why I picked on Penny there. It could have been Josie.
No. All three of them. They all conspire. Yeah, they're always messing with me. but I like...
You know what I'm saying? Like, you may be absolutely right. I just don't know if you're typical, which you may be, or if in the end you end up going like, no, actually there is something there. And that's that. And the point of all of this is Netflix thinks they know. they think, nah, people will go. People will still go.
I think my favorite part of that is the suggestion that what I think I know to be true, I may be wrong about even for myself. And that's something that very few people are willing to consider. And I like that you've held up that mirror to my own reflection. Oh, I'm looking at the man in the mirror.
I try to do that to myself all the time. It's crazy.
I'm asking him to change his ways.
I want to know that. I can't remember the next line suddenly.
It says Shamon at some point. That's all I know. All right, go ahead. So not that you know
and
what?
No message could have been any clearer. Thank you, Brian.
Damn. Okay, good. If this is the moment, since both of us are speculating wildly, I guess we kick it out to the audience. We ask them, is this a legitimacy play? Is this an opening up latent monetary bandwidth play? Or is this a sideshow distraction from the real story? Yeah. The real story.
Totally miss it. Is there one that we didn't think of that you're like, oh, wait, I think I know what it is. You guys didn't say this.
Yeah, cordkillers@gmail.com. Please write us. We were a little bit light on emails this week, I was surprised to discover. So please, we love your feedback and we love sharing it right here on the air.
Patreon.com/cordkillers is another way to send us a message that you like the show by giving us $1. Only $1.
Yeah. $1 is not very much money, I figured out. Do you know that $1 is less than 101 pennies?
Wait, less than 100? No.
Yeah, no. Like you,
but 101 is a very large number, Brian.
Right. You don't even need 101 pennies and you already have $1. Did you know that?
Hold on. This can't be true.
Yeah. Well, science it up, bro. Check it out. And by the way, most people would say, I don't even want $1. That's not true. Because you know who does want $1? Me. And you. He's left. He's walked off screen. A lot of people don't think that $1 is very much money, but guess what? Patreon's figured out that when many people put in $1 a piece, you can get quality award-winning journalism every single week for the cord-cutting grip. Wait a minute. Are you about to... Tom, I can't ask you to do this. What are you doing? So
I've got a bunch of pennies here.
Okay. Tom.
You don't need to do that, Tom.
Yeah, Tom, we have nearly 1,500 patrons that are willing to do that.
So I don't have to empty my bank?
I hope not. I mean, I'm hoping that enough people will join us, kick in a few
Is that
shekels.
A Pringles can?
It is a Pringles can.
It is. It's a Pringles can that my grandma made into a little toy soldier bank.
Oh, look what you people are doing to poor Tom. Please join.
Please back the show.
Look at him. He's a little nutcracker.
Join us over at patreon.com/cordkillers. You have lots of friends among you. You get all kinds of benefits. You get spoiler in time. You get the after talk. Is that what we're calling it?
After talk.
You get bonus content. And more importantly, you get to call yourself our boss. And you are our boss. And we love you. You're the best boss. In fact, we're going to buy you a mug in our hearts, not a real mug, that says number one boss and send it to you.
From our hearts to your hearts. So look in your hearts. Patreon.com/cordkillers. Let's move on to how to watch. During some testimony in defense of the proposed acquisition of Time Warner by AT&T, AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson made a product announcement.
What?
A lot of other stuff happened in this testimony, but among it was Stephenson saying, you know what? We're going to launch something called AT&T Watch. It'll cost you $15 a month to stream, or if you're an AT&T wireless subscriber, you'll get it free. No word on what channels would be included, but he did say no sports. It would be a sports-free skinny bundle.
I cannot believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but I think this is a brilliant idea by AT&T, and I think I will love it. And I think I'll be glad. I will be glad to be an AT&T subscriber, which also makes me realize that the real brilliance of this is AT&T is already a cable company. They have cable
and DirecTV. They own DirecTV.
That's right. Just come up with a new word for it. Don't make me subsidize sports that I don't care to watch. Don't penalize me with bandwidth caps and all that stuff. And guess what? You can secretly, stealthily get me back as a quote-unquote cable TV subscriber.
I think it's hilarious that in trying to convince Congress that Time Warner and AT&T combining would not be a monopoly, they said, we'll throw in a free TV service for our wireless subscribers.
That will only make it more comfortable to be stuck in our single ecosystem.
But how amazing is it? The other aspect of this that I thought of, how amazing is it that companies are thinking of cable television subscriptions as a free add-on? Hey, stick with us as an AT&T wireless subscriber. We'll just throw in a cable package for nothing.
I would rephrase that slightly to say they've been thinking. I am certain they've been thinking of it for 5, 7, 8 years now. How great that they're finally backs up against the wall, put in a position where to shareholders, it's like, might as well say it out loud, people. We've all been thinking it for a while. Just a plus free cable.
Yeah, well, forever, we in the United States anyway, have thought of cable television as this kind of pricey thing that you had to work hard to get at a discount. You had to take the chicken challenge, right?
I mean, yeah. Tom, I hate to say it, but it's like, you know, growing up, and this is an unfair way that a ignorant second grader in 1982 might have thought of it. But you know who didn't have cable? Poor people. And now, you know who doesn't have cable? Smart people. Like, well, I mean, because not having cable meant that you were disconnected from the rest of the world. It meant that you didn't know what all the cool kids were talking about whatever, you know, Revenge of the Nerds movie came out or whatever. And now that's just not the case.
Mean, saying poor people, sometimes people are like, oh, so that's insulting. But you're just saying it was something expensive.
Correct.
It was something you had to be making enough money to afford. If you were out of college in your first job, you probably didn't have it. If you were at a low wage job, you might decide, you know what, I can't afford that. Now it's a free add-on. It's something you just throw in with another package, which maybe you can't afford that either. I don't know. But it itself is not the expensive thing. Like, ooh, they have cable. Well, that's kind of cool. I remember growing up in 1982 thinking it was awesome that Greenville, Illinois, town of 5,000 people, had cable and St. Louis, Missouri didn't. We're like, we beat the big city for once. They're getting cable.
Well, and it's one of those things where, like, what did cable mean? We didn't actually care about the fact that there was a box hooked up. What we cared about was feeling more connected. And now in the world of the internet and so many different alternatives to be up to the second, to get the information that you want, as a one-size-fits-all solution, it's a bit antiquated.
And a commodity, right? There was this value created around it by restricting the ability to get it. In the early days, by having literal monopolies, there was one franchise given in a city, and in later sort of a de facto limitation by making it hard to roll out new services, or the networks playing hardball and saying, we're not going to go on that unless you take all of our networks. And that whole system is finally breaking down. And I think we're finally seeing the real value. It's not valueless, but it's not nearly as valuable as it had been made to seem.
Yeah, sure. I just want to know if it's finally time for me to give up my landline, because you never know. For emergency calling, you might want a landline.
You know, I haven't had a landline in a long time.
Oh, well, what do you do in an emergency? You just die?
How many
times have you died?
Yeah, I've stepped a lot.
So dangerous, so irresponsible.
Yeah. No, I scream. I just scream really loud. Yeah. And people come running. It's more effective than the landline in Los Angeles anyway. All right, let's talk about, we're obviously kidding, people. You can call 911 on a cell phone. We know that. It's time to talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance.
It's all about location. Under Surveillance.
Let's take a quick trip through the trailer park. The final Deadpool 2 trailer introduces the full X-Force roster. Deadpool premieres May 18th.
It looked pretty great. It was fun. It was fun. They do a really good job of hitting that four quadrant young people, old people thing with their music selection and stuff, because like it's the music on this trailer is a remix of Mama Says Knock You Out. And I'm like, that sounds kind of like Mama Says Knock You Out. And then I'm like, oh, it is, but it's a remix and it's meant to appeal because I'm old.
but it's a remix, so maybe the kids will like it too.
Exactly, right? yeah. I loved the digs at the DC universe and all the wings.
I was going to say, yeah.
It was great. I'm really looking forward to this.
Final trailer for Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom came out as well. Showed a little more of the story than I think we've seen before. It's going to be about Blue, the raptor, in a lot of ways. And that premieres June 22nd.
Yeah, so I like the idea of flipping everything on its head where the raptors, you know, the villains from the first movie are now the sympathetic character to be saved. Here we are, what, five movies later. It was very disconcerting to hear the majestic John Williams iconic theme, you know, played in a creepy way where you know, I don't know that, like, that tonal mismatch, while I understand that's what you do when you have to tell a similar version of a story for the fifth time, for some reason made me feel like if that's tonally how the whole movie is, where I spend the whole time not sure whether to be awed by the majesty of the world or disturbed by, I don't know how to feel about it. It also makes me, after seeing the trailer, I'm sad that Team Night Attack has it in the movie draft, and I'm convinced we're going to lose.
Oh, really? Wow. Yeah. That's not why you'll lose if you lose, in my opinion.
But. Oh, we'll lose for many different reasons, one among them being that movie underperforming.
Well, here's something fun to distract you. GLOW Season 2 premieres Netflix June 29th. They announced it in a teaser video set to the song Maniac from Flashdance.
Yeah, that seems of a time period.
Yeah, it's the right time period, and it was a chance for all the stars to, you know, have fun and dance crazy and be in character, and it was a little teaser. It's not a trailer. It's not. I don't expect this to be from the show. I guess it might work into a plot here or there or something, but I felt like they just did this for kicks.
Very expensive kicks, because it's very well produced. But specifically, I guess I'm just a bit surprised, since that was also the play that Deadpool made in a bunch of its teaser ads, you know, referencing Flashdance and so on.
We got some developments here. Netflix confirmed that its adaptation of Andrzej Sapkowski's The Witcher books, not The Witcher video games, will be 8 episodes long and shot primarily in Poland. Apparently, it's supposed to cover the first couple of collections of short stories.
I have no idea how to feel about this. It's probably going to be great, but the confusion of it being not the video game, but the books upon which the video game, blah, 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 blah. Like, all that just has me putting it in a holding bin, you know?
Have you read the books?
No.
Then that's why. That makes perfect sense that you're confused. I have only read the book, the first collection of short stories, and never played the games. So this is not confusing at all. I'm like, oh, the thing I got in the book is going to be made into a TV show. That's normal. Got it. No problem. Whereas the video game, Sapkowski sort of said, yeah, tell your own story. They don't include me, so I'm not going to try to follow what they do. They don't have to follow what I do. But now he's involved, so he's like, okay, this is going to follow my books. That's the break there. And that is interesting because there are a lot of video game fans. I think I am the exception here. I think more people are like you.
Yeah, yeah. But regardless, as always, hope it's good.
Kevin Feige told IO9 that the next Spider-Man movie, which kicks off Phase 4 of the MCU, will be shot in London, and that Spider-Man will spend time outside of New York. That untitled Spider-Man film is currently scheduled for July 5th, 2019.
Hey, what do you think about the brief teasers that we've gotten in the Infinity War stuff where he's looking all Iron Man'd up in, like, futuristic super-duper
Spider-Man?
Yeah, Spider-Man armor.
I haven't thought that much about his look, to be honest.
Well, specifically because, remember, the Spider-Man Homecoming was all about going back to your roots. It's like, be a friendly Spider-Man, you know, neighborhood Spider-Man.
But Tony gave him the new suit in that, too, so.
Yeah, but then he handed it back at the end. Like, I don't need a fancy new suit. I'm me. And then next movie, boom, like, wow, crazy glowy eyes.
I need a fancy new suit. Yeah, I wonder if that'll be addressed. If he'll come back with the old suit, and Tony will be like, no. Yeah,
that would be a great beat. Where he's like, I'm sorry. What about this super galactic villain made you think that showing up in a hoodie was appropriate?
could be a funny little bit. And finally, Amazon is developing a TV show based on William Gibson's The Peripheral. Scott B. Smith is writing, and those Reddit pranksters Jonathan Nolan and Lisa Joy are signed on as executive producers. The Peripheral takes place in two different futures connected through a virtual reality game. One of the futures is close to our present. The other is several decades further along after a collapse in society.
Boy, you those are words that ostensibly make a sentence, and I'll bet they'll be awesome. But for right now, my brain just short circuits. Like, I wish, I don't know. I'm excited. Always excited, I mean, to see
William Gibson for you. It's really difficult to summarize a William Gibson story for anyone who hasn't read it.
Exactly.
That's just the way of it. So yeah. And as miffed as I am at Mr. Nolan's little Rickroll, I think that it's a pretty talented pair there with Lisa Joy and Jonathan Nolan. So let's talk about what we're watching. Brian, what's been filling up your eyeballs?
So, you know, I went out and I did a convention out in Utah. One of the side effects was that I had some time that I had to spend hours and hours arranging slides for a PowerPoint presentation. And during that time, I broke down and I was so upset because my 14-year-old daughter went and watched all of Lost in Space without the rest of the family. And now if we're not going to watch it as a family, well, then screw it. I might as well join team. I'm just going to watch it by myself. And,
Lost in Netflix. Alone.
Continue to love Lost in Space. We'll talk about that in spoiler in time. Spoiler alert, I liked it. Did get caught up on Deadwood. That's two episodes of that. Did watch the premiere of Westworld. And I'm behind on Legion and The Expanse, but man, we're in those harvest days where it's like, there's too much good TV. We got to go in batches here.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, and it's really like, I'm behind on The Americans, which I want to keep watching. I'm behind on Atlanta now, even though I had caught back up. It's weird. It used to be September, right? Back when in 1982, when Brian had cable. It used to be September when the new shows came, and that's when everything was on. Now, here we are at the end of April.
Yeah.
Like, it's mid-season, and suddenly everything is clustering that we like. I know it's not like that for everybody, because not everybody likes the same shows, but it's just a weird feeling to be like, where is that? Why is this all happening right now?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll do my best to get caught up, but there's plenty of for us to talk about. Also, I sat down and rewatched The Muppets with the family. For the life of me, I can't remember. I think I just realized, I think I made some reference that my five-year-old didn't get, and all of a sudden I was just like, oh, we have to do some parenting today. And so watching the Jason Segel, Amy Adams one, and man, once you know that the music was written by Brett from Flight of the Conchords, it's, as far as I'm concerned, it's just a big old Flight of the Conchords movie. That's great.
Fantastic. One of the things I watched Lost in Space, same number of episodes as you, Deadwood, The Expanse, Legion, etc., Westworld. One thing that we put on last night, because Eileen came home very excited. She'd been in at work for a couple hours, and in one of her breaks had found out this existed, but hadn't got a chance to watch it yet, is Bryce's On the Lookout.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay. Yeah, we reported on this about a month or so ago when it was announced. It's the Netflix Sanrio collaboration, Agretzko. So Eileen watched this, right, Tom? Did she like it?
She came home and was like, Agretzko is on Netflix. Remember, we saw the YouTube videos, like, it's there, you could watch it. And so we watched the very first one. And honestly, I think we both thought, well, we'll put it on, you know, and see what the first couple of minutes are. And we just watched the first one all the way through.
Yeah. Well, so if you don't know, it's about Retzko, who is a red panda who works in this cartoony animal world, who works as an office lady, a desk job, being an accountant for an overbearing, a misogynist, a literal pig of a boss. And so, you know, during the day, she's like the very responsible person, always does all the work, stays late. And then at night she goes to do karaoke and sing death metal to like get all of her aggression out.
Choke on my rage.
It's so good. And it's what I really love about it is that it's very short. Each episode is only like 15 minutes, but it doesn't feel like you're getting like changed by it, or that you're missing anything, or that it's going too fast. And it's,
question is, yeah. is it you know, my Penny, Josie, or Callie, which, or all three?
Probably Penny, who's a teenager.
Yep.
I'd probably say her. There are a lot of like things that are tied to Japanese workplace culture.
Salarymen.
But there's also, there's drinking, and there's emotional bottling stuff up. Not to mention just cultural
differences.
It's not
explicit. I'd say no to Callie.
Yeah.
But
But yeah, maybe Josie would probably be 50. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, Josie loved Godzilla at the age of 8. So I think she'll be all right.
Yeah. But the thing about it is that these are real issues that are happening in the Japanese workplace, you know, very specific gender roles, power harassment, bottling up of emotions and the way you solve problems at work. It almost feels a little fantastical if you see it as an American. But it's really like touching, and it's more than just like a, well, just stand up for yourself and you'll solve the problem, because that's not exactly how reality always works.
Sure.
And I also think that like the cast of characters is really good, in that they feel very one note, but you'll probably see people from your real life as various people, you know, the sort of sly, friendly one who's quiet but knows what's going on, the oblivious guy, the overly cutesy, you know, suck up, you know, and it tries to give you more depth on those sorts of people, where you might think, oh, you know what, why do I have an issue with that type of person? I don't, that actually is not, they're doing them. It's really good. And I think, yeah, probably Josie and Penny probably, or Penny and probably Josie would get something out of it.
Right on.
But it's Agretsuko, Aggretsuko. I don't know why they changed the name. In Japan, it's Aggressive Retsuko, which at least is easier to say and spell.
Yeah. Huh.
Also, yeah, there's,
because I get it. It's Aggressive Retsuko, so Agretsuko, but... Yeah, well,
and that abbreviation works better in Japanese than in English, because
you know what? Oftentimes, there's the weirdest thing. Like somebody, there was when we did a show at Universal Orlando, there is an established standards, rights, clearances, who's got a trademark on what name. So we wanted to do I don't know, like a kind of a good and bad thing, and I forgot what the original name was. But they came back and they were like, you can't do that. There's some
rights
thing that has the rights. So we ended up having to call it Menace and Malice was the two different shows.
Oh, and you know what I just thought? This is also a Sanrio thing. And so I wonder if there's like a cool factor of like giving the Japanese sort of name to America and the English words to Japan.
Yeah, to play up the international appeal to both markets simultaneously.
Yeah, because I think that's a thing that Sanrio does with some of their characters.
Maybe Certs has a trademark on Aggressive Retsun for a new flavor of their Retsun.
That timely Retsun humor.
You have to ask your grandparents.
Products of 1982. Agretsuko on Netflix. 10 15-minute episodes. It's very short. I binged something way longer over the weekend. You can binge this in a couple days.
If you got something we should be on the lookout for, be sure to email us, cordkillers@gmail.com. Brian.
Yes.
Tell me a story.
I'll tell you a story. You know what? I don't even have time to tell you stories. I get other people to tell me stories so I can reference them. That's if you haven't been following along over at themodernrogue.com, we got daily articles every single weekday. Plug it into your RSS feed, because guess what, beautiful people? We now have fan-written articles. If you're somebody who has been enjoying all this stuff and you want to be a published author, you could join us. As a matter of fact, if you go to, I think it's modernrogueworkshop.com is where you could go to submit ideas, and you could work personally with one of the first employees, one of the folks who helped create the cracked.com that many know and love these days. John Cheese is the editor-in-chief over there. You get to work with him, and you get to come up with some brilliant articles. Today's article really made my day, Tom, to hear that it popped up in your RSS feed.
Yeah, and I didn't even know, you know, my RSS feed, that's just names, right? I don't always look at the source. And five cheaters who weren't really cheating caught my eye. I was like, well, that looks interesting. I want to read that. And as soon as I clicked through, I'm like, hey, it's The Modern Rogue. That's great.
Dude, it's really, really great. I feel like we're coming up on we're 4 months into this experiment, and the quality of the articles has really hit their stride. People are getting the word out. We're continuing to grow week after week. We probably, in the next month or two, will have to make some kind of big Patreon campaign, because this has all been speculative up until this point. But start reading now, so that when I ask you if you're serious about us keeping it around... You'll know and love it. How about that?
Get hooked for free now, kids.
Exactly. Exactly.
And you could back them on Patreon right now too. You don't have to wait. Well, just get ahead of the game.
Okay, you know what? I like that even better. Sure.
All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
Interesting little spin. These digital native networks are starting to be worked into digital cable packages. Financial News Network Cheddar has launched on Hulu and YouTube TV. Cheddar also already available on Amazon, as well as places like Spotify, Facebook, Twitter, and Twitch. So just blending the lines. This is a network that didn't broadcast to cable, and now it's available right there alongside CNN, Fox News, etc.
Good for them, and I'm sure it's high quality production and good insight. But Cheddar, just so on the nose. What an on the nose there. My competing network, Cabbage, Fat Stacks.
I don't know. You have a competing website headed up by John Cheese.
You know what? I'm gonna sue him. I'm gonna sue him.
is this the Twitter news network, or was that a different thing, Tom?
No, that Bloomberg is the Twitter one.
Gotcha.
Although I think Cheddar might have a deal with Twitter as well, but I can't remember that off the top of my head.
Meanwhile, sports-oriented streaming service Fubo TV has a new investor in the form of AMC joining 21st Century Fox and Discovery. While Fubo focuses on sports, it's been adding local channels and some entertainment networks like AMC, Food, and HGTV. Fubo reported more than 100,000 paid subscribers last September. That's a bigger deal than you would expect. Paid subscribers.
Yeah. No, this is, you know, it's a small number compared to Comcast. It's a big number for somebody trying to get you to pay for what is a lesser known brand. But they're going at it the opposite way. It's weird. They're like, sports only. Okay, we'll throw in HGTV too, because Discovery owns HGTV now and they're an investor. Fine.
Well, I think that's the smart thing to do, because when you're setting up a brand, when you're trying to lodge brain positioning, you really just want to be one thing. And the temptation is to try to be all things to all people. And of course, then you end up in the mushy middle. So it's probably smart to, just like Twitch pulled a very, very smart move by essentially being Justin.TV, only saying, we're none of that now. We're only games. Okay. And I guess cooking and painting and okay, you got us. We're Justin TV again. We always were Justin TV, but you mainly think of us as games, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sports Illustrated launched a $5 a month streaming service last autumn through Amazon, and it will soon be available on Roku, iOS, Android, and the web, offering studio shows, films, and documentaries. They don't do live sports. But again, another example of a channel that launched in an unusual way historically, now expanding to other mediums.
And CBS All Access is now available in Canada. Canadians get the service commercial free for $5.99 Canadian per month. It will not have Star Trek Discovery, as Bell Media has the rights to those in Canada. CBS plans to bring it to other markets around the world as well. I hate to say it, Tom, but the longer it sticks around, the more CBS All Access sounds like it might not be the insane idea I thought it was.
I've never thought it was insane. I've always thought this was a really smart move for CBS. I'm the only one praising my former employer, even though I don't like a lot of the other things that they've done. CBS All Access in Canada, interesting, because they're saying, okay, Star Trek Discovery isn't our thing there because we gave those rights to somebody else. So it's going to be back episodes of stuff. We're going to try to make it as a Netflix network type thing. And it's going to be even harder internationally where they gave Star Trek Discovery to Netflix everywhere else. So that may be the thing that comes back to bite them.
Yeah, fair enough.
Business Insider reports an independent auditor for MoviePass's owner Helios and Matheson Analytics said it had, quote, substantial doubt about the company's ability to remain in business. Helios and Matheson reported a loss of $150.8 million last year. CEO Ted Farnsworth emphasized that $110 million of the $150 million loss is non-cash. So he's like, we're not bleeding all the cash that you think we are. We think we're going to be fine. And it is kind of common for these auditors to look at a startup that's losing money and say, if they don't figure out a way to make money, they're going to go out of business. You people should know that. It doesn't mean they are definitely going out of business, but I think a lot of people have had that curious question about how MoviePass is going to turn this around.
Well, especially because like they're just writing checks and buying mindshare. Now, keep in mind, there's a lot you can make happen with a big database with a brand that is instantly beloved. I mean, the ghost, the shambling corpse of Napster still roams the earth based entirely on the goodwill of its completely illegal original distribution method from 30 years ago. So it does. Was that the timely reference jing that I just heard?
Anytime you say Napster, an angel gets a twing.
Unfortunately, a lot of wingless angels out there right now. So my point being, like, you can thread this needle, but they're getting real close to the part where they got to figure out where they're going.
Yeah, I mean, the honest news here is not this auditor thinks MoviePass is going out of business. Watch the movies while you can. The honest analysis here is, MoviePass is doing that thing that can work if you're Amazon and cannot work if you're pets.com. And we don't know which one they are yet.
Exactly. The Alliance for Creativity and Entertainment, which counts Netflix, Amazon, and several Hollywood studios among its members, is suing another set-top box maker for encouraging piracy. SetTV follows Tickbox and Dragonbox in being targeted for encouraging copyright infringement. What does it take to get busted on that? Like you have to go beyond wink and a nod territory. You have to be like, oh, I don't know, there's lots of things you can watch. Wink.
Yeah, I mean, they're relying on the fact that they put in their terms of service that you should not use this to infringe copyright, and that anyone who sees copyright infringing should let them know and they'll remove it, right? Safe harbor. Problem is, they're also advertising like, watch all of these channels for $20 a month. And it's like, well, you obviously know this is going on, right? So you're marketing it that way. And it's interesting to see traditional studios and companies like Netflix and Amazon teaming up to go after these. And we get these emails all the time like, hey, why haven't you mentioned this box? It's $20 a month and it gives you all the channels, you know, why? And it's like, man, it's probably not a legitimate service. That's why. Let's get to some dispatches from the front. Joe has a question about MoviePass. We get these a lot too. He says, perhaps it's a loophole, but when I use my MoviePass at my local AMC theater, I am able to do the following. Remember, as I read this, able to do is not the same as allowed or encouraged to do. He says, once I'm close to the theater, I choose the movie I want to see in the MoviePass app and check in, and it tells me that the card is ready to be swiped at the theater. At the kiosk, I select all the tickets and seats that I need. When it's time to pay, I swipe the MoviePass card first. The machine tells me it has insufficient funds, and I'm able to pay the balance with another credit card. This helps in a few ways. I'm able to choose seats together with others easily, even with MoviePass. I was at a matinee, and the ticket price was $6.95. But MoviePass had added $12 to my card, so I was able to put the rest of the money towards the other tickets. I can also choose a non-3D movie from the MoviePass app, but when I arrive at the theater, purchase a 3D ticket for another movie, even though MoviePass only covers most of the cost of the ticket. The balance of that ticket is paid with my credit card, along with the other tickets. Maybe this only works with the kiosks at my local AMC and wouldn't work with other types of kiosks, but it makes me love my MoviePass even more.
Yeah, I wonder what kind of tricky territory you get into. So right now you're taking actual money that it, man, I would look at the terms of service on this one, because that might enter into full on fraud territory, because you're taking actual money. Now, the only reason, like, it would definitely be fraud if after having done all that, you requested a refund and walked out with 10 actual dollars without having participated in the whole thing, whatever. But I don't know how close it is receiving the service in kind or applying bits of it for an upgrade would be.
Yeah, it's tricky. And it's definitely something MoviePass doesn't allow you to do. Right. Their terms say you can't use this for a 3D ticket. Yeah. Doesn't mean they stop you, but that also, you know, an unlocked door doesn't mean you get permission to enter someone's house.
Either. Correct.
Yeah. And if you get put into the program where you have to take a photo of your ticket stub to check in for another movie, this would not work for you anymore.
Yeah.
Because a lot of ticket stubs are receipts.
Got it. So. David from Riverside writes, hello, Tom, Brian, and everyone else. Before I begin, I'd like to apologize in advance for sounding like a total know-it-all nerd, but I felt I must say something. The Netflix Lost in Space is the fifth incarnation in the film TV media format. When Irwin Allen developed the original pilot, there was no robot and Dr. Smith. A comic book company by the name of Golden Keys were publishing a series called Space Family Robinson for a few years before the pilot. The comic was so similar to the show that Golden Key contacted CBS about the issue. Long story short, Golden Key and CBS came to an agreement in which Dr. Smith and the robot were added to the show to differentiate itself from the comic book. Second incarnation is the TV show you already know, as well as the third incarnation of the movie. The fourth incarnation of the franchise is an unaired TV pilot called The Robinsons Lost in Space in 2004. That pilot was directed by John Woo. Yes, the action director of Face Off, Broken Arrow, and many Hong Kong action flicks. At first, it sounded cool for John Woo to direct until I learned he was not that much into science fiction. As you can guess, there is a reason why it never aired. You can find this pilot on the net if you know where to look. Also, side note, some of the sets were later reused on Battlestar Galactica's reboot. Then lastly, you have our Netflix version. I got to tell you, the most interesting part to me is knowing that Dr. Smith and the robot being tagged on as a legal workaround for that property of Space Family Robinson. Those two are easily the only interesting parts of the entire show. I mean, I want to say only, but I mean, they're the most interesting parts, you know?
They're the iconic ones. They're the ones you remember. You remember the robot saying "Danger, Will Robinson," which makes you know who Will Robinson is. And you remember Dr. Smith looking kind of shifty and evil, right?
Yeah. Vaguely sinister at all times. Yeah.
David from Riverside. First of all, you have convinced me you are right. Second of all, pilot is part of the first incarnation. Just this happens a lot, right? Star Trek had a pilot that they never aired. They made a second pilot. So I'm not sure if that makes it a difference, but I love, like Brian, the Golden Key stuff. That's really interesting. And if you want to hear more discussion on this pilot of the original Lost in Space, check out Current Geek in our autopilot episode next week. Not tomorrow, but a week from tomorrow, we're going to talk about Lost in Space, and we're going to view both pilots, the original one without the robot, Dr. Smith, and the one where they did include those. I was unaware of the John Woo unaired pilot, too. That's an interesting fact.
Awesome.
All right. Hey, guys, says Jay from sunny Tucson. Brian has mentioned the ease of starting and stopping video services through Amazon. It's certainly easy, but I hit a stumbling block. I signed up for Stars through Amazon, found I can only watch it through the Prime Video app. Can't watch it through the Stars app on Apple TV, Roku, LG, or Sony TV. Not even through the Stars website. Basically, he wanted to watch it through the Stars app, and he can't. And so that doesn't work for him. So he canceled the subscription from Amazon and subscribed directly from Stars.
That is a legit point, and one that never would have occurred to me. We've talked about how once you get settled into your ecosystem of choice, it gets real cozy in there. And that's definitely where I'm at.
Amazon hasn't figured that out. And I'd be curious if there are some of the third-party channels they offer where they have done this to say like, oh, you can still log into their app if you want, but it's so much better in our ecosystem. You might want to stay there.
Yep. Larry writes us saying, hey, Killers, thanks for the heads up regarding high maintenance that Sarah mentioned. If not already brought up, please mention HBO Go also has the web series of High Maintenance listed separately when you search on HBO. They're half as long and at least as good, if not better. Also, each episode has a neat one-minute director's comment with Kachi, K-A-T-J-I, and Ben. Way worth a watch. Cord Killers is the best. We'll become a patron when incomes allow. Why, thank you. You know, I think you can. What happens in patronage when can't you like follow our show on Patreon without necessarily paying for it?
Yeah, there's a big follow button on patreon.com, and you also get email alerts for when free posts go out and when the spoiler and times unlock a day or so after they publish. So
basically think of it as an easy way to subscribe without necessarily giving us money.
Yeah.
And then you're already in the works if you get that income later on.
Yeah. And if you want to
Graham, aka Gouchum, says, I can't believe I'm actually writing this, but in defense of cricket, there is a modern form of the game absolutely hated by purists called 2020 cricket. It plays fast, loud, and has streamlined rules anyone can pick up. The link below is to a short Caribbean Premier League sizzle reel titled Party Cricket and More Party. In short, This is not your colonialist overlord's game. Grin.
Oh my God. This makes me so happy. not your colonialist's cricket.
Yeah. They do this with rugby. It's called rugby sevens, where they're like, regular rugby game's a little slow for some people. Let's make it faster. Let's make it more exciting. I 2020 cricket. This is great.
Dude, this is the slam ball of cricket.
It's the XFL of cricket. That's amazing. Thank you, everyone, for watching. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. Brian, any last words before we leave?
No. Wow. I get to have the last word. Why, thank you, Tom. Just for everybody to please subscribe to us and join us over at Patreon.
Our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we are live at twitch.tv/nightattack. Which is also carried on diamondclub.tv, Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We will cut all the cords with you next week.
Hey guys, Brian and Tom here, and it's just the same old message at the end of the credits, just like always.
That's right, Brian. Nothing new here except your name showing up.
Oh my gosh, I've got a name.
You just supported us on Patreon.
Yeah, all those $5 donors, look at that. That's your name in pixels. We're going to make you famous, kid. Put your
name
in pixels on the internet.
There's some classic names in there. But some of you are new. Some of you aren't there. It's sad. What can they do, Brian?
I mean, they could go to patreon.com/cordkillers and pledge $5 an episode to be one of these amazing people. Like this one.
Amazing.
Oh, look at that name right there.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.